started in
Talk AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Good morning and welcome to your Valentine's Day edition of Justice and Drew.
Yes, that's right.
I'm Drew.
Yeah.
My funny Valentine over there.
Yeah. My Bella to your Edward.
No! God, please, no! No! No!
No!
That made me laugh.
It's Valentine's Day. They were very romantic.
Oh, my God. My Padme to your Anakin.
Oh, there you go. Now we're talking.
It's going to be a very cringeworthy show today.
A little creepy.
In there pushing our buttons this morning and answering your phone calls, the lovely, talented, radiant, auburn-haired Brianne.
Good morning.
In for Sam. Sam is taking a few days off to deal with some family stuff. She'll be back on Monday, maybe?
We think?
Nope.
Maybe Friday?
Got me Monday.
I don't know when she's going to be back.
Yeah, we're not here because we're not here on Monday. Because we're taking Monday off.
We are taking Monday off.
Yeah, we're not, yeah.
But she was, I didn't know if she was or not.
One day she'll be back. Until that time comes, Brianne will be in there.
Friday, Monday, or Tuesday. We are not sure.
In the meantime,
Brianne is doing a
very nice to see
very
you
capable
morning.
Job in there. Nice to see
Good
you.
Good to see you guys.
On the show today, we will do the coming up, the top five things that we think Sam would have wanted you to know for a Wednesday. We've yep. got America's for
got
Prosperity.
A good sense of what floats our boat.
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah.
America's for Prosperity, Jason Flores will be joining us in studio. They had their big event last night, so we'll get details on that.
The legislative kickoff, we'll find out what their priorities are for this upcoming legislative session.
Also, we're going to dive into the, there was a Star Tribune editorial about the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act and the freak out from the Star Tribune coming from our county attorneys. Rob Doerr, Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, will be joining us in studio just after 8 o'clock. And then in between, we've got all kinds of stories. We've got stories of resilience.
Yeah.
We've got stories of revamping food stamp programs.
Mm-hmm.
We have stories of lists of challengers to President Barack Obama in 2020.
You mean President Donald Trump?
President Donald Trump in 2020.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking about Obama before the show started. It happens a lot because you know we just can't quit
Sometimes
him.
Sometimes the mouth moves faster than the brain.
Pretty much. If you go to Twitter, you can see why we were talking about former President Obama. But 36 challengers. I've added
36.
A few. I've added a few, by the way.
They came up with 36 potential challengers. That's more than the Democrats have come up with.
It's true. It's very true. It is Valentine's Day, though, guys.
Any big Valentine's Day plans?
That's funny. Why would you ask that question? Why would you? Why you got to be so cruel?
It's a very romantic day.
Oh, yeah. All the romance. There was more romance.
Chocolate and a couple's massage.
There was more romance in the intro of the show talking about Bella and Edward that'll take place in the Justice household. Okay, let's be clear. But speaking of Valentine's Day, I do have an article here I wanted to share with the both of you from Mirror UK. Okay, would you take it? Okay, a medical test to determine if you are actually in love or if you are indeed faking it.
I don't buy it.
Well, hold on. Don't rush to judgment. This is science, okay?
Now a new 23andMe feature.
A medical test. This is not like a BuzzFeed article, right? Determine the biological evidence for being in true love will be available in Britain within a decade. says one of the world's leading neurologists.
Followed by a record number of divorces.
It is a painless, non-invasive procedure that will enable doctors to accurately determine whether a patient is truly smitten or faking it.
Why?
Well, there's a lot of different reasons.
Why?
Well, in the story, they talk about what if you are rich and famous and you want to make sure that the person you are with is not a gold digger.
This is very Black Mirror-ish.
Okay. It will work by detecting the presence of potent love chemicals in the brain using an MRI-type scanner. The chemicals called nanopeptides are only produced in significant quantities when a person is truly in love, researchers now believe.
Nah, I don't buy it.
So they can scan your brain to find out how many of these nanopeptides you got to find out if you're really, truly, truly in love, right? They say they can test the brains of people. Could be a reality by 2028, said Fred Knorr, a renowned U.S. doctor.
A premarital scan may even become a necessary and legally admissible element of a prenuptial agreement. That sounds terrible.
That's the best Valentine's Day talk ever.
So romantic. Right?
Hey, honey, for Valentine's Day, let's go get our nanopeptide scanned.
I want to find out what you really think.
Isn't that how they tested to see if you're a strong Jedi in Star Wars?
You've got a lot of nanopeptides.
I was curious, Master Qui-Gon. What are nanopeptides? Unlike lie detectors and other existing devices, okay, such as a scanner, such a scanner could not be duped and would boast an accuracy rate of between 97% and 99%.
Yeah, this is a BuzzFeed quiz come to life.
Okay,
that's what this is.
For the sake of argument, though, let's act like this is legit.
Okay.
Let's act like it's 97.
Let's give it the benefit of the doubt.
Benefit of the doubt. Would you take it, Brianne? Would you take it? Would you take the medical test?
Here's the deal. I'm sure it is real, but I just think life is much more complicated than we like to think and put into science terms and things like that. And I just don't think you can boil it down to certain chemicals of the complications and nuances of what you're feeling. We've all read Twilight. We get it.
No, we all haven't.
I'm joking.
I only read New Moon. So love can't, what you're saying is, in your mind, while the test of the nanopeptides might be legit, love extends beyond nanopeptides and cannot be quantified in the quality in terms of science.
And I'm sticking with that.
It's measured in a lot of intangible ways.
Right.
You know, and it means different things to different people. You know, there
at different times.
Yeah, I mean, what you can't control what triggers a chemical reaction in your brain. That's something that is completely out of your control. But you can control, you know, how you feel about people and how you act towards people and how important people are to you. And that may be more important to you. Those elements may be more important to you than some ridiculous chemical reaction.
Okay, now given those, so you would take it though still. Right?
I didn't say that.
Okay, well, given that thought, would you take it?
Sure.
Would you?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Drew, would you take it?
No.
No?
No.
I would. It just confirmed my suspicions already, anyhow.
Lovely.
I'm not saying anything either way. I'm just saying.
Oh, you're just saying. I'm not saying.
I'm just saying. I'm just saying. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Very romantic edition of Justice and Drew underway.
Justice.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. 103.5 FM, Justice and Drew, Brianne filling in for Sam, who will be back at some point in time.
Either Friday, Monday, or Tuesday.
And then we're back on Tuesday.
It's like we bought the Sam Scratcher. We just don't know. We don't know what we're going to get.
What's the difference?
Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Brianne doing a wonderful job filling in. She will be taking your calls throughout the morning. 651-989-5855 is the phone number, or use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. You want to communicate with the show.
It is time to get into what we think Sam would have wanted you to know. We've scoured. We've done some internet scouring ourselves.
We've chosen the stories that we think would be floating Sam's boat this morning.
Number one.
President Trump is donating his fourth quarter salary, the White House announced during yesterday's press briefing, where President Trump's salary for the fourth quarter is being donated. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders told reporters his salary for this quarter will be going toward the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Aww.
How generous.
That's nice.
They're really hurting. They're really hurting for bucks.
Yeah.
Knocking on the White House door with their hand out. Most recently, the president donated his third quarter salary to help the Department of Health and Human Services combat the opioid epidemic, Sanders said. Today, the president is proud to donate his fourth quarter 2017 salary to the Department of Transportation to support their programs to rebuild and modernize our crumbling infrastructure. This quarter, as mentioned, Elaine Chao, Secretary of Transportation, said the president has generously decided to donate his annual salary to the department's Infrastructure for Rebuilding America grant program. Infra directly reflects the president's proposal by providing dedicated discretionary funding for projects that address critical issues facing our nation's highways, bridges, and ports.
Do we have any historical background on how often presidents did this? I don't recall
hearing about it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. This is just not something that I've been aware of presidents doing in the past.
Right.
Donating their salary to...
I'm sure it's happened.
It's kind of weird that he's donating it to government. They're not hurting for money.
Well...
But it's symbolic.
Well, it is. Look, I dig it. It's not earth-shattering. It's a goodwill gesture. And considering right now that the focus is on the infrastructure bill, it makes sense that he's doing this. I want to do some digging, though, because I am genuinely curious if other presidents have done this. And if other presidents have done this and it wasn't reported, because, again, I don't remember ever reporting it.
Right.
Why are we... reporting Donald Trump.
That's why I think it's unusual.
You ready? Okay. JFK and Herbert Hoover.
They were the only ones?
You looked it up?
Yep.
Interesting.
Did you find out what they donated their salaries towards?
Well, it says Hoover did it to
vacuums.
Boost his...
Sorry. Dad jokes.
Stop it. To boost
that
the
joke
staff's
sucked. Paycheck. That was really bad. I really apologize. Sorry, go ahead.
For reading to a halt. Vacuums. He did it to boost the staff's paycheck.
Okay.
Like this classy guy. He probably bought him all vacuums,
So he's like, he gave bonuses. Okay, right, okay.
That's cool.
All right.
That's cool. No, I'm going to give it to charity.
Well,
I mean, if I were going to do that, I would pick out charities that were sort of integral or central to whatever agenda I was pushing at that moment.
Well,
whatever agenda was sort of front and center, I'd find a charity that's working with that agenda. Although for infrastructure, it's kind of tricky. So I mean, like you said, it's a symbolic gesture. I think it's clever of him to do this. I think it's smart of him to do this. It pushes back on that entire narrative of he's just did it to enrich himself.
Right. Well, and here's what, and I'll go the here's me, and I'm do your voice. Here's me, the Trump apologist, but. Because the infrastructure bill is something he's trying to work through, and it is difficult for a lot of conservatives to swallow the trillions of dollars that are going to be spent on that and the necessary accountability, it is, I think it's a goodwill gesture for him to put his own money into it, since it's our money that's going to be used for the infrastructure bill, so I dig it.
Number two.
Get it? Because you got to dig for... Okay, out of the Pioneer Press, former St. Catherine University student accused of starting several small fires there last month may have hidden out on campus for up to a week in January. So in light of the information, the university is enlisting external assistance to review its safety procedures for possible improvements. There is no evidence to show anyone else was involved, and there is no current threat, according to St. Kate officials. This is something that we are just looking into out of an abundance of caution because we want to make sure our campus is as safe as possible, according to a university spokesperson. If this did indeed reveal some policies and procedures that could be changed, we want to go ahead and do that. But there needs to be an assessment first to find out if this is something that could have been prevented, if it indeed did happen.
So we don't know if it happened, and if it did happen, we don't know if it reveals some security flaws, and if that they did, then we... Okay.
Who's on first? I don't know. Third base.
Yeah.
I feel like this story of...
There's more to this
This
story.
Jamal, this Tunza Jamal Hansen being... It, just the whole series of fires, right? The whole situation, what she said, her allegiance to jihad. I just feel like this should be a much bigger deal than it is.
Stinks to me.
Yeah,
yeah. There's more to this. I mean, we talked about it earlier about how she had tried to join various terror groups,
yeah,
traveled overseas and attempted to join. So there's a reason why she's getting, I mean, this what looks like on its surface a fairly benign crime, right? She set some fires in some trash cans. Nobody was hurt. There was no significant property damage. You could chalk this up almost to like a bad college prank, right? If you just look at the nature of what she did. But to be brought up on federal terrorism charges, I mean, she's got connections to groups that they want to learn more about, I think.
After allegedly setting 9 fires on campus, the 19-year-old Hassan of Minneapolis was charged in a Ramsey County District Court, first-degree arson. Later, she was charged in federal court with terrorism charges. None of the fires resulted in injuries or severe damage. The biggest was in a dormitory that housed a daycare. 33 children and 8 adults were in the building during the fire. Reportedly told investigators she started the fires because she heard about the U.S. military destroying schools in Iraq and Afghanistan, and she felt inclined to mirror that. Going on to say, as we've talked about on the show, you guys are lucky that I don't know how to build the bomb because I would have done that. Adding to this, I wish that we were having, and we've had the discussion with our counterterrorism expert, David Gartenstein-Ross, but I wish we were having an adult, honest conversation about the recruitment efforts in the region. We had the story talking about, you know, how the recruitment efforts are by and large much larger here. And unfortunately, there's a lot of sensitivity involved in that, and I get it, but it's a conversation that we need in a dialogue that we need to be having, because yeah, this is a problem.
And what's happening here in Minnesota specifically that is enabling those that would want to radicalize young Muslims to have a greater degree of success here,
right,
than they have anywhere else?
Yeah,
there's a there that I'm not picking up on, that I think, you know, I would appreciate it if our leadership would be spending more time investigating and talking about.
The media has been good about covering this particular event, but they're stopping short of going further and doing more investigative reporting on the reason why it happened, and I wish they would do that.
We are going to continue with the top 5 stories you need to know to kick off your Wednesday next.
Justice in
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew. Jason Flores, American for Prosperity, will be joining us in studio just after 7 o'clock this morning. Right around 7:35, found out about a new position I didn't know existed. It is a Minneapolis resilience officer. The chief resilience is they
it's a fake
they
office.
They have a job to be resilient.
Well, and apparently nobody knows what that means.
Yeah. Oh, I know what it means. I figure I cracked the code.
She just sat there in her office and was like, "Oh, I'm so resilient."
Well, what's great about the job is that the chief resilience officer is stepping down to be replaced by somebody else, but we don't know what the first person did. And it wasn't for a lack of them not doing their job. They were doing their job.
They had no job.
Well, they kind of had a job.
We'll get into it.
Yeah, we'll get into it. I do have my take on what that job entails.
Unbelievable. Just epitomizes government.
$128,000 a year. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
We did leave off in the midst of the top 5 stories you need to know to kick off your Wednesday.
Number 3.
A lot of marijuana busts happening around the state. Major marijuana busts in northwestern Minnesota are keeping the state patrol busy. The troopers have confiscated...
Sorry.
Got it. Troopers have confiscated hundreds of pounds of marijuana in the past few weeks, discovering the drugs following just routine traffic stops. Apparently, I-94 is a big drug trafficking artery.
Pot corridor.
It's a pot corridor. I-94 is a gateway between Minnesota and the Great West for those seeking wide open spaces. It also appears to be a popular conduit for those seeking to traffic drugs. The most recent bust took place February 9th in Otter Tail County after a trooper pulled a motorist over for an obstructed license plate inside the vehicle in plain sight. The officer could see bags of pot on the center console and on a seat with a woman sitting on them.
Nice!
What am I going to do with all this pot? No, just sit on it. Just try to hide it with your butt.
What if we
maybe
get...
your sciatica was acting up or something.
That's not how medical marijuana works.
Are just, you sure about that?
I'll just rub it on your butt.
Well,
I guess you don't know till you try.
Right. I mean, you know, we mock what we don't understand.
That stash turned out to be a total of 300 pounds of marijuana just sitting in plain sight.
You know, you wonder if the logic is, we've got it out. You know, what if we get pulled over? And basically, if we get pulled over, it doesn't matter. Like, if we get pulled over, we get pulled over, we're done. So it doesn't really matter if it's out in the open or not.
Well, when you have that much, it's really difficult to try to hide the hide the smell. You know, I think officers.
Oh, is it difficult?
I think, I've heard.
Yeah, you need to pack it in coffee grounds. That's what they do in the movies. That's
why I saw that in a movie.
Hey, Eddie Murphy.
you're probably right. You're carrying around that much, just like crossing your fingers, hoping you don't get pulled over. On January 26th, a trooper pulled over a driver on 94, also in Otter Tail County, recognized signs of criminal activity. He deployed a canine dog who discovered approximately 200 pounds of marijuana with a street value of $600,000. 2 days earlier, another pullover resulted in the finding of 24 pounds of marijuana and $8,200 in cash. The recent spike seems to be part of a trend. In 2017, the State Patrol seized 2,642 pounds of marijuana, up from 389 in 2016. That's a big spike.
Yeah, it is a big spike.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, are these dogs bummed out? Right, because they keep using dogs to go and sniff it out. Like, are the dogs like go? They get so close. Are they giving them edibles afterwards?
I don't know.
Just to keep them motivated. You know, you let me find it, now I can't have it.
I wonder if this trend is because of the loosening of marijuana laws in a lot of states, that people are going to these states and purchasing it legally. And then transporting it back,
maybe it's a hope that authorities will be more lenient, given how things are changing. It is stories like this, though. I'll be honest. It's stories like this that give me the further desire to legalize it. Like, I'm not saying it's going to stop the drug trafficking, but. It'll do
serious damage to the black market, though.
Well, you know, maybe it'll allow these fools to go legit. You know, and not have to have the law enforcement officers have to deal with these types of busts. Right. I wish that was also a discussion that we were having on a bigger scale.
It's happening. And, you know, recreational use is legalized in more states, more and more states, and you're getting that kind of that domino effect, as we see that it doesn't bring on Armageddon. When a state legalizes recreational use, it does do a lot of damage to the black market. Like, why would I, if I wanted marijuana, right? Prohibition, first of all, doesn't work. It just simply doesn't work. People have been smoking marijuana and will continue to smoke marijuana. And anybody who wants marijuana has very little trouble trying to find it. It's just the bottom line.
Right.
Even in states where it's completely criminalized. So prohibition, A, doesn't work. B, creates black markets, creates criminals. If you want marijuana and you live in a state where recreational use is legal and you can go to a store and buy it, why would you risk getting involved with any sort of criminal element? You wouldn't. Nobody would.
Yeah. You know, you talk about that 6 degrees of separation of Kevin Bacon. Right. You know, this, like, you know, anybody that works in any sort of large, you know, office building, it started back in high school. And then when you got jobs, it was like 5 degrees of separation to get Mary Jane.
Right.
You know, you just ask a person to ask a person to ask a person.
Number four.
Out of CBS, Kansas election officials are putting the brakes on a dog's campaign for governor.
Aw.
Taryn Woolley of Hutchinson decided to file paperwork over the weekend for his 3-year-old pooch, Angus, to run for the state's top office after reading stories about 6 teenage candidates. According to the teens, entered the race after learning Kansas doesn't have an age requirement, something lawmakers are seeking to change. Woolley said he read through the bylaws and requirements for Kansas governor, and it appeared that his dog really could run for office.
Apparently, there are no requirements for the Kansas governor. I mean, it's Kansas, so it's Kansas. It's not like it's a hard job.
It's just all flat, right? It's just like this is big. Like, this is flat. There's not a whole lot there, except for Superman. That's where he's from, right? Yeah. Angus is, or Indiana. Where's Superman from?
I don't know.
Was it Indiana or Kansas?
Dorothy was from Kansas.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, I think I'm conflating the two. Angus is a type of hunting dog.
Common mistake.
I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. I'm fighting a cold. Angus would need to run as a Republican, apparently. He is described as caring, nurturing, an individual who cares about the best for humanity and all creatures other than squirrels. However, the Kansas Secretary of State's office says man's best friend is not capable of serving the responsibilities required of the governor. It did raise a question, though, for me, Drew. Can a dog fulfill the duties of lieutenant governor?
In this state, yes.
Yeah. That's what I was genuinely wanted to...
In this state, yes, absolutely. Because there are no requirements for lieutenant governor.
Right? Yeah.
Number five.
A Pennsylvania pastor, this is from Fox News, insists he was merely counseling a naked man cops found bound with nylon rope in a parked car on a residential street. So this guy's got a naked dude tied up in his car.
Right.
And but he's telling the cops, no, it's all fine.
Yeah.
It's like, there's nothing to see here. Just move along. George Nelson Gregory was sitting in the back seat of a car parked outside a house in Homestead when cops, responding to a call for a suspicious vehicle, spotted a naked man bound with nylon rope in the front seat around 11:30 p.m. on Friday night. A witness told police the naked man got out of the car in full view from his daughter's window. Gregory told the officers that he and the other unidentified man were just playing.
Just playing?
Just playing.
What were they playing?
I don't know.
Okay.
Tie me up and drive me around? I don't know. I don't know that game. Said it was a completely consensual setting, adding that they meet up from time to time to play with each other.
Okay.
Usually I'll choose like Scrabble.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a big on board games, but you know, you want to have a game of Sorry over this, I'll go with Sorry.
Uno.
Yeah. I'm down with that.
2018, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Nothing to see here, guys. Just the naked man bound up in my car. It's all fine. Despite being inside a car on a well-lit public street, one witness said he saw the naked man from his daughter's window. Gregory believed they were in a private setting.
No. Well, okay then.
No, you weren't.
No. Mm-mm. No.
Nothing to see here, guys.
Reminds me of...
just move along.
The movie Game Night, I think, comes out this weekend. I don't want to see that. Right? If they do the real-life game and somebody gets captured.
I don't know if there's naked men being bound up and driven around in that game.
Hey, good job on the potential Sam's top five boat floaters there, Drew.
Same to you, John.
Hey, getting back to the pot real quick, President Donald Trump doesn't drink, right?
He has, I've heard him say before that, yeah, he doesn't do anything mind-altering.
That's the one thing, not the one thing, but of this administration, I am surprised that there hasn't been a more positive push on that. Because I know Attorney General Jeff Sessions has been very wanting to continue to enforce the marijuana laws. Right. And that's him specifically. This seems to be, at least in my mind, would be the administration to do something on the federal level. And I'm surprised that they're still going that route.
I don't have any expectations of any liberalization of marijuana laws under this administration.
It just seems weird to me.
Well, I think Trump has a definite issue based on comments I've heard him say in the past with drinking, with being intoxicated at all.
Which is why I brought it up, right?
You know, so I think that would fall under the sort of thing where in his mind, people shouldn't do that. It's illegal. So we should enforce the laws.
Yeah.
This is going to have to be tackled on a state by state basis.
Yeah.
You're going to have to see states push back on the federal government on this. And it'll probably be another administration or two before we see any real significant reform of marijuana laws.
Yeah. And I guess when you go back to former President Barack Obama, I mean, with what he did in laxing the rules of enforcement, if it was also going to be done, he could have obviously done something about it as well and didn't see it as politically viable. But I didn't like what he did either because he just kind of confused the issue.
Well, and that was one of my big frustrations with the Obama administration as a whole. Rather than actually reform things, he would just choose to he would selectively enforce laws. Rather than work to either take them off the books or have them rewritten or have them reformed in a tangible way, similar to DACA, right? He would just issue these sort of executive guidances into the Justice Department as to what they would enforce, how they would enforce it. When there was a story earlier this week or late last week about how under the Trump administration, the Justice Department is using those executive guidances a lot less, which is making it a lot easier for like the business community when it comes to regulations. You know, the law is the law, and the law should be enforced as the law is written. That's the only way you know you have a crappy law that needs to be reformed, replaced, or repealed, right? right? So, but instead of doing that, you know, under the previous administration, they would just tell you which laws they were going to enforce and which ones they weren't.
Yeah, but it's kind of like immigration.
But it was just guidance, right? So they could still choose to enforce the laws that they would issue the guidance that they weren't going to if they felt like it.
Right.
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 If they had a reason to.
It was very nuanced.
They kind of had it in their back pocket in case they needed it. And that's a really crappy way to govern.
Well, and even with what they did with DACA, and we'll get to the story here out of the Hill, and what they did with DACA, you get into the details of DACA and what the Obama administration did with that. It was so picky choosy. I mean, when they set up the guidelines for it, it was so. I mean, we talked about it back in 2012, how it was so glaringly clear the political motivation behind what they were doing with DACA, and the situation that we're in right now, where we got this 2-year cycle. And right now in the process of having this open debate on what to do about it. Out of the Hill, a second federal judge has issued an injunction barring the Trump administration from ending the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program while litigation plays out in court. The U.S. District Judge Nicholas Guerra-Rufus, an appointee for former President Bill Clinton, wrote in the Tuesday court order in New York City the administration could not rescind the Obama-era program pending a decision on the merits of the cases. Defendants thus must continue processing both initial DACA applicants' DACA renewal requests under the same terms and conditions applied before September 5th, 2017.
Yeah, that's what's frustrating about this. Because of Congress's inability to actually get something done on this, because of the Democrats refusing to compromise and pass a DACA fix with the terms that the president has said that he wants in them, increased border security, we're just going to be stuck in this sort of perpetual renewal of this program that is frankly unconstitutional.
Well, and I'm tired of these activist judges. Look, I know it's their right to do this, but they are, you know, they're symbolically, in my opinion, abusing their power by going this route. I hope that people will start to pay more attention to who ends up getting into these positions, whether they're elected or appointed, and do a better job of either electing them to these positions or electing the people that go and appoint them to these positions. Out of CBS, a piece of audio, CBS This Morning, journalists Tuesday pestered Tom Cotton, wondering why the Republican senator wasn't offering up an immigration bill more to their liking. It's really, we have the audio here. This co-host John Dickerson living up to his right? You hear the audio.
It's appropriately surnamed.
Yeah,
co-host.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't want to word that correctly. I didn't want to imply too much. But you just listen to this audio and this journalist just grilling Tom Cotton.
Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas is one of the lawmakers who introduced the bill. He's also a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and he joins us from Capitol Hill. Good morning, Senator. Let me start with your immigration bill. Can it get 60 votes, which is the threshold there in the Senate?
I hope so, John. We'll see when we have votes in the Senate this week. As you know, it's somewhat unusual to have this freewheeling process. Lots of senators say they want it. Of course, now that it's here, some senators are a little nervous about it. But here's what I do know about our bill. It's the one bill that can become law. We shouldn't be focused on passing a bill out of the Senate. We should be focused on passing a law, something that can get the majority vote of the House and that President Trump is willing to sign. And this framework legislation is both generous. As you say, it gives legal status and ultimately citizenship to almost 2 million young illegal immigrants who are brought here through no fault of their own. But it deals with the negative side effects of that as well. It helps secure our southern border and it ends the practice of extended family chain migration. I think that's a sensible and coherent package, and I hope we can get 60 votes.
But you can't get any Democratic votes for your bill to get it out of the Senate. So you're focused on passing a law, but it's not going to get out of the Senate, which means it won't be a law.
Well, John, we won't know until we put it on the floor and we have those votes.
But there are other bills that could get 60 votes, aren't there?
You can't sit with us.
Yeah. It's interviews like that where...
Do what the Democrats want. just come on.
It's not going to work.
People have asked us often about having... having individuals, especially who are elected to office, who are not of the same sort of opinions as we are or different parties, like, does it ever make you nervous? Like, well, no, because they always have to be nice, right? Tom Cotton's got no choice. He can't push back on that guy for being that way. He's got to be nice to him. But man, just the nerve of that Dickerson guy.
Yeah.
You know, which you can't get done.
Yeah. He's basically just saying, just do what the Democrats want. Just give the Democrats what they want, and then you can have your law.
651-989-5855. Americans for Prosperity have issued a statement on the president's infrastructure plan. One of the things that we'll be talking about with Jason Flores from the Americans for Prosperity, they also had a big event last night.
Legislative kickoff event last night. We'll find out what their priorities are going into this legislative session. Jason Flores joins us next.
Justice in